Welcome everyone to today's ILTA podcast entitled The Scourge of the Non-Attorney Hemming. I'm your moderator today, Hari Dubad-Wakles. I'm a Senior Project Manager of Legal Operations at CBRE. And I'm thrilled to be joined today by our distinguished speakers, Jennifer Bluestein, who's the Chief Talent and HR Officer at Perkins Coie, and Chris Boyd, who's the Chief Operating Officer at Wilson Sonsini. Welcome, Jennifer and Chris. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for hosting. Delighted to be here.
Great. All right. So let's jump in. Chris, we'll start with you with this question. So the landscape for hiring and recruiting within law firms has changed a lot since January of 2020. And then again, since the end of 2022. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in the industry and in conversation with peers? And what surprised everyone the most about how recruiting and hiring has changed in the legal field?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. A lot has remained the same, but some things have certainly changed and some have dramatically changed. I mean, fundamentally, we are a client service business and we hire people who are really focused on delivering value to clients, whether they're external clients or internal clients. And we want to help those clients achieve their goals. So we hire people across the board, lawyers, business professionals, paralegals, and so forth, who really want to help clients get there. So we develop their skills, we promote some, we help others succeed elsewhere, shall we say. And we expect that. That's part of our business model. So fundamentally, the core aspects of hiring have not really changed that much. The things that have changed are very significant. And the most obvious may be that we're paying lawyers much more than we used to in the past, at least at the big law salary scale. Which I'm sure delights you and other clients, because that gets reflected obviously in rate hikes. But obviously, we can negotiate pricing and other kinds of fee arrangements that help you achieve your goals and are consistent with your metrics and so forth. But that said, we're paying a lot more for lawyers. I mean, just I think it was about 5 years ago, the starting salary for big law firms like the ones that Jennifer and I work for was about $180,000, and that rose to $325,000 for eighth year and above associates. And we've had three jumps in the past 5 years. So the starting salary for first year lawyers who are fresh out of law school is up to $215,000. And at our firm, and I think at most big law firms, it goes to about $415,000. So over 5 years, that's about a 20-ish percent raise at the bottom level and about a 30% at the high end. So that's just, we're paying lawyers much more. And that's been a result of the intense competition for talent, at least up until about 6 to 12 months ago. And we are doing a lot behind the scenes to make sure that the lawyers and the people who work with the lawyers justify their fees to clients in terms of investing in efficiency and process improvements and value-based pricing and so forth. But the fact is, we're just paying lawyers much more, and that's a big change in the market.
I'll add on to that snowball effect that I think Chris is referring to. So now we've got clients expecting more bang for their buck, and they want the sophisticated legal project management, dashboards, technology, partnership on pro bono, more metrics and reporting around D&I. And so then we now have to pay a lot more for these very sophisticated business professional roles. And I think what really snuck up on us is we kind of were waiting, right, to see, okay, associate salaries are probably going to jump. But then what happened is not only did they jump, that these business professional expectations and competition jumped as well. And I can say this because Chris and I have each lost talent to one another's firms, where you've got somebody really good, you spent years training them up on some very specific, you know, how to create a legal project management dashboard, whatever it is, and they're gone, or they come to you with job offers for 30 to 40% more than their current salary. And then all of that market data that we collect is out of date within a month. So it's not just the inflationary measures that we're seeing in the market, it's even beyond that because of the changing expectations of clients. So I think that's another, you know, interesting turn of events. And then the other one is that outgrowth from COVID of people no longer want to be trekking downtown, whether it's partners or associates. And so how are we training our attorneys? We had all these new laterals, they're coming from other places. There's no stickiness. because they don't really know us. And then it's harder to get that stickiness because they want to work from home more. And so on the one hand, we look at it as, well, how do we get people back in the office? But I think the reality of it is, how do we train and develop and retain people knowing they're not going to be back in the office much at all, ever? And we can strong arm them all we want, but we really have to change how we connect and connect with and train our new associates. And I think the junior associates are really struggling and are not developing at the same pace that we would have expected.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm most interested in seeing kind of play out over the next 5 to 10 years is really how firms are adapting, you know, because I know that there is in some places, there is a desire to say, you know, well, just bring everyone back because that worked for us. But I think that I think it's an exciting time and you can get creative and it'll be interesting to see what comes. So to that end, what are your predictions for how things are going to change or stay the same over the next 5 to 10 years? Do you think attorneys will fundamentally change their expectations around work-life balance, and are firm resources being marketed to attorneys during the recruiting process to say, hey, we have LPNs, hey, we have all this technology to help bolster that work-life balance? And Jennifer, we'll start with you.
I think that is, like you said, it's ever evolving, but I think that we are slowing the amount of change now. The trick will be, how are we adapting our use of, you know, technology to make it work? But I do think that we're going to be met with this resistance to going back to how it was. The other piece of it too is there's more non-billable expectation. And I don't just mean non-billable expectation where people are getting billable credit for it, but business development is taking up more time. Having the sophistication of procurement departments is taking more time. And so I think the hours are just trending downwards for a lot of reasons. It's not just about work-life balance, but I also think that we have to have more structures in place. You're seeing more law firms go to structured workload capacity management. And that old system of a free market system isn't really working. And we're seeing epidemic amounts of anxiety, not just on our associates, but partners and our business professionals. And so I don't think we're going to be going back. I think the prediction that I'm going to stick with is we're going to continue to evolve, but it's to make it work now. And it used to be a lawyer would marry another professional, maybe a lawyer, maybe not. And after, let's say, 2 kids, one of them, usually the female, would end up staying home. And what we see now is they're like, I mean, I just got a call the other day from a partner who's like, I think I want another child. I'm trying to figure out how to make this all work. And so the two-parent career is also changing that as well. So I think we're going to see more of it, but it's really going to be more about the industry changing our expectations. And we might even be staffing our matters differently so that people can have somebody covering on a given night. You know, it may become a little bit more structured in that way as well. But I'd love to hear Chris's thoughts on that.
Yeah, you had asked about changes in hiring, and there are certainly some very significant ones in this area. And just people's expectations for work-life balance have changed markedly from 10 to 20 years ago. The title of this podcast is The Scourge of the Non-Attorney Heading. And Jennifer and I are very explicitly addressing professional staff as well as lawyers in our comments, because we need all people working together and collaborating to deliver value to clients and succeed as an organization. But when it comes to associates in particular, since they are the bulk of those who deliver legal services, which is our business, their expectations have changed markedly from 10 or 20 years ago. And not only do they expect to integrate their work and life much more, to have more balance, they also expect much more hybrid and flexible work arrangements. That's partly a generational change. It's partly a pandemic-driven change, as Jennifer noted. And that won't go back. That will be with us for the foreseeable future. They also believe, and rightly, and this is all people, not just associates, that money isn't everything. And they have high expectations for wellness benefits and programs from their organizations. They expect their employers to invest and a compelling work environment that isn't just a salary, but is it is all encompassing in terms of supporting their lives. And so, of course, this can sometimes cause conflict with rightly high client expectations for excellent service. And so how you balance those, Jennifer mentioned work allocation programs, development programs, and so forth. So we're doing what we can in terms of investing in the capabilities of our lawyers, our business professionals, our client service teams. But fundamentally, we have to continue investing in wellness benefits and other perks of the job to support our people in a relatively demanding profession. We certainly have massively expanded those at our firm over the past 5 years or so. Some of that was pandemic driven. Some of it was just part of being an employer of choice. And I'm sure all companies are looking hard at this to attract and retain the best possible people. I mean, that includes for those who have billable hour requirements, like associates. We provide 1 week of vacation that counts towards their billable hours because we want people to take time off. We want to say, you will not lose billable credit, at least for this 1 week. And that's really important, both as, I mean, for the reality of getting the billable hours, but also as a signaling, as a messaging device, that vacation is critical and you should take it. And we actually have career development managers who will help an associate get her clients and matter staff so that she isn't on her device the whole time she's on vacation. And that's really important too. So those types of roles, and Jennifer alluded to them as well, are really critical towards providing the kind of support, the investment in the work-life balance and the wellness of our people over time. There are many more, we could go into much more detail, but that is a big change from 5 or 10 years ago in terms of how we attract and retain people.
Yeah, I love that. That is such a great, it's such a good step in the direction of, yes, we actually do want you to take time off. I love that. All right, so the genesis of this podcast really was Kristen Rhodes, my colleague on the ILTA team, and I were talking about kind of the split between attorneys and everyone else and how, you know, in some firms they're called lawyers and non-lawyers, and, you know, there's splits across firms and kind of how they address it. What have you seen across the industry? And do you think that those divisions are breaking down or becoming more defined or something else? And I'm assuming that, as with everything else, you know, there's some firms are really working hard on it and other firms, you know, things are just playing out as they are. But what have you seen, and kind of what do you think, how do you think that's trending? What's coming down the pipeline? Chris, we'll start with you.
Well, it's really interesting because I've only worked at Wilson Sonsini in terms of a law firm, and I've been here for about 25 years. So I've built a wonderful career, but I have a somewhat limited perspective. So I can talk about my experience here. I don't know how universal that is. I was a lawyer here in the 90s. I've been a business professional here since 2002. And in my experience, good business professionals have always been viewed by lawyers as key parts of the client service team. We had extraordinary paralegals and executive assistants and billing professionals and so forth who were really critical to delivering value to clients. And we viewed them as part of the team. We worked with them. We talked with them. I was just in our San Diego office a few weeks ago, and we have lunchtime training sessions, and the San Diego corporate practice brings everybody into the room to talk about, say, proxy season and what are new developments in proxy disclosures. We want the paralegals, the executive assistants to understand how we are doing this work for clients and what is a proxy statement, what are the elements and so forth. And that's really always been the case. And over time that expanded into, as we built out business development teams, for example, they are critical parts of putting our best foot forward to current or prospective clients. The financial people, you in your role at CBRE, I'm sure are dealing with a lot as to how do we pay the bills? How can we communicate expectations to clients? How can we remove grit and friction from that process and make it work for everybody? That's a critical part of the client experience. So having a strong finance team at each step of the way is essential for good client service. Professional, you know, talent management people broadly in recruiting and training have always been critical parts of the employment experience and the client service experience. So I'm not trying to paint too rosy a picture, but at least here, and I've only been here, business professionals have always been key parts of the client service team. So that said, I'm a realist, and as long as law firms make almost all of their money practicing law and selling lawyers' time, there will be some kind of lawyer and non-lawyer divide, because the lawyers are the ones who are licensed to deliver legal services. Non-lawyers are typically are not, although there's other ways to bill for them and to have them deliver value to clients. And so there are various ways to address that divide and to include everyone, not only include everyone, but make everyone feel included. One way, for example, is firm-wide communications that really don't differentiate between lawyers and business professionals. We have town halls for everyone. We have office meetings for everyone. I mentioned the San Diego corporate meeting. Everybody's included because we're all part of the team. Yeah. We have a wonderful newsletter that we call Engage that we started during the pandemic to keep people connected and healthy and engaged. And that goes to everyone. And we profile everyone in the little vignettes we have in that newsletter, because everyone is part of the team. So yes, there is a real and perceived divide to some extent, but there are lots of ways you can address it. And I'm sure Jennifer has others.
Yeah, I think we agree on that. I think there are certain things that the business professionals and law firms can, you know, ask in the interview process or ask about as they are developing their, you know, what percent of your internal business professionals have been promoted within the firm. And then it becomes an even bigger issue, I think, to think about, are there career paths? Are there talent managers on the business professional side of the house, or is it just something for the attorneys? Is there a leadership training and development team for the business professionals, just like there is for the attorneys? And I know when I was at my former firm, I was actually kind of given this team to take over, and it was a combined team of technology training and then at the time called staff training and development. And we really built that into an organization that had, you know, competencies. And so that has, I think, become more of the norm. And it's something that our business professionals are looking for and expecting, especially the more sophisticated they are. They're coming from outside of law. So to come in, you know, if you work at T-Mobile and you come into a law firm and you're doing finance or marketing or whatever it is, and there's no services for you, you're kind of like, what is going on here? Why am I a second class citizen compared to other people? It's similar to, I think, organizations where the sales force are the ones that get kind of all the perks and all the development and all the bonuses. And then everybody else is kind of treated as less than. And so we want to make sure that we have something for everybody. Those tracks and the training and the competencies, yeah, they're different from the associate expectations, but they should at least exist. So I think that's where we're seeing with that more sophisticated workforce. We've got tons of JDs and MBAs in all of our firms now. What are we doing to retain and develop them other than just giving them a paycheck? So I think that's where things are going now.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And to your point about people coming from outside of the field of legal, I think that brings such a great perspective and can really move things along and bring new ways of working. But it requires that they feel like they have a stake in sticking around. So, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today. I really appreciate your insights. Thank you for sharing with us. And thank you to the audience for viewing or listening. We hope you enjoy and have a great day.
Thanks
for having us.